This is Horns Up. I'm Animesh.
And I'm Peter.
And we're going old school with Bangalore's own Cryptos today, who released their sixth studio album on 1st October 2021. It's called Force of Danger, and it adds another chapter to the sound of denim and leather and everything heavy metal, a sound that's been championed by frontman Nolan Lewis since 1998. Nolan, welcome back to Horns Up, man.
Hey, good to be here. Thanks for having me on the show.
Yeah, so we last spoke to each other around 2 years back, just before Immolation tore up fandom in Bangalore. And that was like August 2019. So obvious question, man, how's life been? How was lockdown? Heard everyone had COVID. So I guess everyone's like negative now and vaccinated.
I mean, the lockdown was as bad as it was for us as for anybody else. Yeah, we all got COVID one after the other. Ganesh got COVID twice, some dumb shit. And yeah, we just had to, you know, power through all that somehow. And right now we're all okay. Everyone's vaccinated. Everyone's doing well. Everyone's going to work now. So yeah, but for like, you know, a good year and a half, we couldn't do anything. We had to like push our European tours to 2022. We didn't have time to, and we couldn't do anything actually regarding the band, you know, but somehow in the middle of all that, we managed to record an album. I don't know how we did that, but we somehow managed to do that. It kind of sucks because we actually expected, you know, the pandemic to die down in 2021, which is why we scrambled to get the album recorded so that we would have it in ready in time for a European tour in 2021. But no, we got egg on our face over there as well. So right now we have an album coming out and we don't have a tour to promote it because it's pushed 2022.
Why couldn't you guys be like maiden and record something like 2 years prior and not release it? And
yeah, I wish we had that luxury. But unfortunately, it's like in Bangalore and not... Where do they live?
I don't know.
I have no idea.
Bruce guessing probably different lives parts of the world.
Bruce parts. Probably lives on a 747.
He was stuck in Italy or in France.
Yeah,
one of the two countries when the lockdown was first, like when the pandemic first hit. Anyways.
Yeah. You know, since we brought up Maiden, right? Nolan, you're a Maidenhead like us. What did you make of Senjutsu? Be honest.
I'm not really a fan of anything Maiden has done since from Brave New World onwards. Senjutsu is pretty much the same as all the albums that came before it. It's a strict 50-50 album. Five good songs. Good songs, and five below average songs. And man, some of the songs just go on and on and on. And thankfully, they all like, you know, they don't go into like 15-20 minute territory like last time.
Yeah, but yeah. You're one of the few guys who likes the X Factor and Virtual 11.
I'm not a big fan of Virtual 11, but I like the X Factor. And there is some X Factor Virtual 11 bits and bobs in the new album. I mean, there are some songs that could very well, like Death of the Celts and all that stuff, it's straight out of Virtual 11. It's like the Clansman Part 2, but much worse. Come on, X Factor was a really good album. And none of the songs exceeded like 6 minutes.
Which one was Angel and the Gambler on?
Oh yeah, that was on Virtual 11.
It's like the
first Maiden song ever. I hold that song responsible for all the shit they did since.
Yeah, the Angel and the Gambler tends to do that to you. I mean, how many times can you just hear, don't you look like a stranger? Anyways, fuck that shit, man. We're not here to talk Maiden, although that deserves a separate conversation with Nolan anytime. We are here to talk Force of Danger. Congratulations, man.
Thank you.
So, what is Force of Danger like? Is it your heaviest? Is it the one where you've returned to your roots? Is it the band's best album ever?
All bands say the new album is their best album ever. But, you know, ours is, it's more of the same. It's the same. It's a continuation of Afterburner, which was a continuation of Burn of the Night. So I would say it's like the third installment in the trilogy, if you want to put it that way. I think the only difference is maybe the production on Force of Danger is a bit rawer. It's got more NW BHM style production. The guitars are pretty sharp. The bass is a bit buried in the mix. It's a bit snarlier. It's more focused, I would say. And the songs are much, you know, they're more, how do you say, they're more compact. So compared to Afterburner. Afterburner had a bit more breathing room and, you know, things were spaced out a bit more. But Force of Danger is pretty much straightforward. It's like it just knocks song. It's just song after song. It's like knocking down dominoes, you know, tuck, 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 one by one. And it gets to the point straight away. There's no farting about, you know. It's just straight out, which is what I really loved about all the old NW BHM albums, you know, like by Angel Witch and Blitzkrieg and Jaguar and all. There was no messing around. It was one riff, a kick-ass riff, go straight into the verse, chorus, solo, that's it. And you're done. Next song, let's go. And it's all about just keeping the momentum going. After what we did with Afterburner, this was the natural progression. And I think if you look at the themes of the songs and the lyrics and everything, you know, it's extremely heavy metal this, metal that, blah, blah, blah stuff. So I think we might have exhausted our vocabulary with that on this album.
Yeah, I'm just like reading the track list and you can hear that, right? But we totally agree about, you know, Force of Danger being a natural follow-up to Afterburner.
Yeah.
I must ask you though, did the success of Afterburner propel the creation of Force of Danger?
Yeah, I mean, Force of Danger is its own beast, you know. We didn't really, Afterburner really didn't have anything to do with it. We didn't really think of topping it or making another Afterburner or anything of that sort. Force of Danger was just what we were, I mean, we just felt like writing that music at that particular point in time. We were all locked down and stuff, you know, we were watching a lot of old movies, like, you know, all the stuff we grew up on, Terminator and Escape from New York and RoboCop and whatever it is, you know, and we're just getting all these waves of nostalgia. So, you know, we're like, you know what, let's put some of this into our music. And it worked, you know, because we aren't just influenced by bands. We're also influenced by a lot of stuff, you know, books and movies and all kinds of things that we read or watch. So this was kind of like, it's like when you watch these 90s sci-fi action flicks and stuff, you know, there's always that element of suspense and danger, there's danger in the air or whatever it is, you know. So we kind of wanted to capture that feeling on this album, and I think we managed to do that, especially with the cover art and, you know, all that stuff.
You bring up the visuals, so let's talk about that. You guys have done a lot when it comes to the visual appeal for Force of Danger, right? Your music videos are looking like the slickest I think they've ever been. You've done lyric videos, you've done high-end photography, or at least professional photography, coordinated clothes, and you're spending a lot of time on it. You're spending definitely money on it. That can be seen. Was that always what you envisioned for the band? And is that something you think the band needed at this point of time?
Yeah, I mean, you know, I've always been of the opinion that previously we weren't really, all the elements that go into making our band, you know, they weren't really tied together. It's kind of like we had one look, our music sounded a certain way, our photographs looked a certain way. It was just all spread out a bit. I mean, it's been getting tighter ever since Burn Up the Night. But I think, you know, on Force of Danger, we wanted to get a bit more together, I would say. Because if you look at the photographs and the album cover and the lyrics and the music and the vibe of the entire thing, it all kind of fits together, you know. Which is kind of what all these bands, like Priest did with Painkiller, for example. If you look at the photographs from that era, compared with the music, compared with the lyrics and all that stuff, it all ties in together really well. And we actually also plan on, you know, getting maybe, you know, a stage setup done, which kind of fits the album artwork and the vibe of the lyrics and everything. Because it's, I remember when there was a Judas Priest, the Judas Priest Painkiller tour itself. They had, you know, they were just completely like the most metal they've ever looked. Because it fit the vibe of that album. And I think even for us, for this album, I think I would say this is our most metal album, you know. It's got all the hallmarks of pure heavy metal, I would say. Probably when we start getting, you know, start playing live shows and stuff, we'll start getting some of these elements in on stage, the way we dress, probably, you know, getting more studs, more leather, more chains, all that stuff. And now we're going to do it in this heat and stuff, but we'll manage somehow. There was a conscious effort in, you know, to get all these elements under one roof, so to say.
When you were talking about that, I was just thinking about you wearing leather pants. I have no idea how you do that live, man.
It's actually quite comfortable. It's, and they are my wife. They are my wife's pants. So.
Right. So coming back, right, we talked about the videos. I mean, I really liked the lyric video for Raging Steel, which honestly, if you look at lyric videos, right, it's always just like lyrics, just the words floating in the air and coming at you in different directions. But you guys had far more than that. Was there a strategy that you all planned behind the videos and the singles that you all selected?
It's really weird because we've released three singles so far, Force of Danger, Raging Steel, and Hotwired. And we've spent the least amount of time and money on Hotwired, but it's getting the most traction out of all three, which is really weird because we envisioned it to be the exact opposite. You know, we kind of like, we spent a good amount of time and money on the title track, Force of Danger. We made a really full-on video for it with a script and characters, and there was a lot of effort that went into it, you know, because we kind of expected it to get the response that it kind of deserved, or probably we expected it to get. It didn't in a certain way, but not as much as we hoped. But it's cool because we always wanted to release an anthemic kind of song as a video, because that we're pretty sure it's going to be a slow burner. It will start catching on eventually. That's, of course, going to be one of our staples when we play live going forward. So that was fine. Raging Steel, that was a bit of a shock for me because I was really pumped about that video because we got the guy who did the unofficial lyric video for Painkiller to do it for us. He gave us a killer video. I was like, wow, this is awesome. This is like the best lyric video we've ever done. And that took a bit of time, some money, effort, whatever, blah, blah. But and I think it's the best song on the album, but for some reason it hasn't caught on as much as Hotwired, which is really strange because Hotwired was, you know, we just put some tour footage together, spent like I think a day on it, and put it out there. It's like it's hit 75,000 views already. So I don't know what people want anymore.
I thought Kryptos was all about not giving a fuck about what people wanted.
I know, that was just a joke. But, you know, it's like you put out these singles kind of as like a teaser for your album. You know, this kind of tells you what an album's going to sound like. And you kind of hope that, you know, it will catch on a bit and it will get you more mileage in the right circles and all that stuff, you know, basically, which ultimately leads to all the good stuff, you know, like, you know, people talking about your album, you get gigs, you get, you know, promoters hear about you and all that good stuff. But yeah, I'm glad that at least one of the singles caught on, you know. Hotwired was like, it kind of really exceeded all our expectations. And it seems to be, I mean, at least from all the press that have been interviewing us, reviewing our album and stuff, they seem to be latching onto Hotwired a lot. So I guess it works.
Fair enough. Okay, since we're talking the music videos, let's just wrap that end up as such. Force of Danger, it promises a continuation of the storyline. Are we ever going to see that? If not, what was the continuation intended to be?
I hope we'll see a continuation. I have no idea what's going to happen in the future. But the continuation was going to be like, you know, we were planning on doing it for the song Dawnbreakers. It's basically a biker song, get on the road, wind in your hair, all that stuff. But we are kind of going to do it like, you know, the robotic creature, whatever, you know, in Force of Danger, he's going to be riding in a Chevy or something, and he's going to be chasing us on bikes. Like, you know, there's going to be like a high speed chase and explosions and stuff. So that's the kind of stuff we've envisioned. I don't know if it'll ever happen, but it'll be great if it does. But at least, you know, we might, if we can't do it physically, maybe we'll try and, you know, get an animation done or something like that, because I think it'd be pretty cool.
Okay, let's play a song from Force of Danger. Which one should we play and why?
I think you should play Dawnbreakers. To me, that song is, it's everything that this album and us and the band in general. You know, we're all about, you know, just having a good time, making your own choices in life, being free, you know, in your head, just doing what you want to do. And it's also kind of like, since the song is kind of like about camaraderie between, you know, these guys in this biker gang or whatever, you know, like for fans of Sons of Anarchy, they'll kind of know what I'm talking about. It's kind of like how it feels like to be in a band as well, you know. It's four guys against the world. You know, when we go out on tour, it's kind of like it's just us, and you know, we are out there to make a mark, and you know, we all have to look out for each other and all that cheesy stuff. But but you know, and Dawnbreakers kind of encapsulates all of that in like 4 minutes or so, and I think it has two of the best solos on the album. Like Rohit really outdid himself, especially if you listen to the ending solo. It's straight out of J.K. Lee's, you know, handbook. It's a phenomenal solo, and he actually nailed that solo in like a couple of takes, and all of us like, because he spent a lot of time on the previous solo, but when he finally got into his groove and he knocked that solo out, we all were like, what the fuck? Like, this is awesome. So yeah, I think that's some of his best work. And I don't think Rohit gets the credit he deserves as a lead guitarist, you know, especially in, you know, in the Indian scene at least. Because he's actually, if you consider his solos ever since, you know, Coils of Apollyon and Burn of the Night and so on and so forth, he's been kicking ass ever since then. And honestly, I think it's about time, you know, some of his stuff starts getting showcased, because I know as a band, it's all about the band, it's about the songs and stuff like that, but you know, it's kind of like you wanted to be like an Aussie Randy Rhoads kind of situation, you know, where the guitarist also gets some of the spotlight, and I think his solos definitely deserve some of that.
Jones.
let's get to the basics now. I mean, you know, you talked about the riffs, right? And I really want to know, what makes a riff a Kryptos one? I mean, like, is there like a test that it has to pass? What goes on between you and Rohit? Tell us.
There's nothing special, actually. You know, it's just got to sound good. It's got to sound catchy. It's got to make you feel something. Like, especially for me, when we sit and, you know, we put riffs together, we start stitching stuff together. It's got to put images in my head. It's got to make me want to think of something. Like, you know, there's a song, Omega Point, on our album, which straight away made me think of outer space and, you know, Event Horizon and all this creepy stuff outside, extraterrestrial stuff and blah, blah. It automatically put all this stuff in my head. So it kind of made it easier to take the song forward. So, you know, when we're writing riffs, it's got to be catchy. It's got to put some sort of imagery in your head. And it's also got to be, I wouldn't say unique, because I don't really think we are that unique when it comes to writing riffs and stuff. But the riff has to be quality. You know, you can be influenced by, say, Black Sabbath. You could write a riff like Tony Iommi. But it's got to be, you can't just do it lazily, you know. You got to put some conviction into it. And there has to be some sort of quality to it. Like, you could, of course, you could play like a simple riff like Iron Man, but can you play it like Tony Iommi? Or can you put your spin on it that, you know, you're paying homage to Tony Iommi, but you're doing it in such a way that it's not like an obvious homage, you know. It's like, oh yeah, he's put a slight spin on it, so I know where it's coming from, but it's going in a different direction, kind of like that. So whatever we do, you know, of course we are influenced by like Priest and Accept and Maiden and all this stuff, but if you listen to our riffs, they might sound familiar, but they kind of have a slight deviation to them, which sets them apart from the bands we're influenced by. And of course, on top of that, when you throw in my shitty vocals on top, it takes on a whole different meaning. But yeah, that's the basic thing. You know, it's just got to, when we sit and write riffs, they have to sound good, they have to be catchy, and they have to have a certain quality to them that, you know, showcases our influences, but also takes a slight detour somewhere down the road.
And all that kind of like ties in with your, like, I remember what you told us last time, which was that we write songs, or Kryptos write songs, with which you can have a few drinks with.
Exactly. It's got to be riffs that you can hang out with your friends, have a few drinks, you know, or some kid listens to and he's like, whoa, I can play this. Or, you know, it's like, that riff sounds really cool, really catchy. Let me pick up my guitar. Maybe I can learn this riff. I mean, that's kind of how we learned how to play the guitar. That's how I learned how to play the guitar. I would watch Dave Murray or Slash or whoever it was. And I'd be like, oh, cool. It sounds simple enough. Certain riffs or certain melodies. Let me see if I can figure it out. And I think that's the most important. It's kind of like, you know, the riff for Crazy Train. How many guitarists have been inspired because of that one riff? Or Smoke on the Water, or Paranoid. Simple riffs, but if it weren't for those simple riffs, we probably wouldn't have, you know, heavy metal as it is today. Because those simple two-chord, three-chord riffs have inspired like millions of guitarists to just pick up the instrument and, you know, just jam and come up with stuff on their own. So hopefully, you know, some of the riffs that we come up with can inspire kids in India to do the same, or anywhere else in the world for that matter.
Now, see, there's a flip side to this, right? The thing about writing music that appears to be simple is that it can seem effortless, right? Like it could seem like you guys had written it in your sleep, but yeah. That itself is a huge challenge, or that itself is a huge compliment as such, because it takes effort, man, to pull something like that off. Like, simplicity is excellent, but to arrive at simplicity after having spent so much time listening to so much music, it's complicated stuff.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, this is something I tell people. I mean, I have conversations with some people who say, you know, AC/DC is so boring because it's so simple, or, you know, what's a big deal? I'm like, dude, you know how long they've been around and how many killer riffs they've written, and simplicity in itself is, it sounds simple, but it isn't. You know, you can listen to like an album like Highway to Hell or, you know, High Voltage or whatever. It sounds simple. It's like, oh, that's easy. It sounds simple. I can play it in my sleep, but what's a big deal? But dude, can you write it? You know, can you write an album like, can you write two albums like, can you write five albums? Can you write 10 albums? Can you do it for like 50 years? Most people can't. 99% of people on this planet cannot. I think we are in that sense, we're a bit blessed because we've kind of, you know, really taken the simplicity of the music we listen to. It kind of runs in our, it's made us who we are, you know. That simplicity is kind of how we live our lives, and also how we write our music as well. So, you know, when we write a riff, when we write a song, we just make sure that even though it's got like maybe two riffs, three riffs at most, we need to make sure those riffs count, and we need to make sure that these riffs are structured in such a way that, you know, everything just makes sense. It's like 4 minutes, even if you have two riffs, you just got to place them in the right fashion, structure them in the right way. It's like a jigsaw puzzle, but maybe a 20-piece jigsaw puzzle, you know. You just kind of get all the pieces in the right areas, and that's it. You have a great song, because at the end of the day, the song is king. If you have a great song, no matter how simple it is, that's it. It doesn't matter if you can play like a million notes per second or play like double bass at light speed or whatever it is. It's all about the song at the end of the day. So in that sense, because we are so used to writing simple stuff, it comes natural to us. You know, it's become ever since Burn Up the Night, it's something that really came easily to us. We always wanted to strip things down, and we've just carried on since then. So I think, you know, you can expect a Dream Theater like album next time.
I'm wondering who's going to grow the Petrucci beard, you or Rohit? All right, but on that note, let's play another song from the album. Which one do you think we should play and why?
I think you should go for Thunder Child. Thunder Child is kind of like it's a Mad Max inspired song. You know, if you read the lyrics and stuff, it could very well turn into a Mad Max script. But in this case, it's more of a dystopian landscape, and, you know, these kids who have special abilities and stuff, special powers, they're all enslaved by this evil empire, and, you know, it's all out in the desert, and it's got all these dystopian futuristic imagery going on, and it's all about, you know, breaking free from all that, and, you know rising up, and it's all about revolution and all that cool stuff. Why I really like this song is because I think it's the heaviest song on the album. It's got really pounding double bass that really sounds like, you know, a tank going over bones or something. Towards the end, Rhodes included some really killer solos and some killer fills in there. But towards the end, it gets like super fast. There's like a quick switch, which is kind of like what Iron Maiden used to do with a lot of their songs. You know, they start off slowly and then suddenly it goes really fast, like in Afraid to Shoot Strangers or something. You know, they have those fast bits. Or, you know, it's also kind of like Heaven and Hell, where the ending kind of just speeds up and it ends in a huge crescendo and stuff like that. So that's kind of that's exactly what we've done with Thunder Child. It gets really heavy at the end. There's solos flying about everywhere, and it's just it builds to a point where, you know, and where it's like you're just and everything just slams you in the face right at the end, and the song's done. So I think that's probably our heaviest and our most I would say it's probably the most ambitious song on the album, because we had a lot of trouble recording it as well, because it's not easy to play double bass so like constantly for that long. So yeah, we just had a tough time in the studio.
There it is, Thunder Child. So Nolan, in our last chat, you remember we spoke a lot about what it means to be Indian, right? Especially in metal. The good thing is most of the reviews that I've read about Force of Danger, one, they aren't by Indians or Indian publications. So that's that. But they all still roughly begin the same way, which is to state the fact that Kryptos is an Indian band. So here's the question again. Right, in a way, does the Indian tag still help Kryptos, a band that is releasing or has released its sixth album?
It does help in a certain way, because of course it's a novelty factor. It's a novelty factor. A lot of people who haven't heard of us, who haven't heard of metal from India, you know, they're like, "Whoa, an Indian metal band! Let's check it out." Yeah, okay, I guess it does help with, you know, the curiosity factor. If somebody told me, "Hey man, would you like to check out this metal band from Madagascar?" I'd be like, "Whoa, Madagascar, cool. Yeah, I'll check them out." You know, but I think we've reached a point where we've, I think we should have moved past that by now, actually. You know, actually, when we play live, when we go on tour, when we started touring like many years ago, people were like, whoa, we're banned from India. They kept asking us about India and, whoa, man, how's it in India, blah, blah. And how come you guys are playing metal and all that stuff? And, you know, you got to keep telling them the same spiel, you know, yeah, dude, we can play metal and, you know, we don't have snakes in our pockets and we don't ride elephants and all that stuff. But over the years, they've come to realize that we are just another good heavy metal band. It doesn't matter where we come from. They have accepted the fact that we play heavy metal, we play this kind of heavy metal, and we do it as well as everyone else. So it doesn't really matter, you know, where we come. Their curiosity is no more about, oh, cool, these guys are from India, let me check them out. It's more, oh, you know what, I saw them last time, I had a lot of fun watching them. I'm going to watch them again, not because they're from India, but because I enjoyed the show. I discovered another good metal band, and I like the music. The music ticks all the right boxes, and that's it. That's why I want to keep following them. So, you know, the last time we went out on tour, I think there was maybe one person on the entire during the entire tour who actually brought up the whole India thing. You know, oh, you know, you're from India, blah, blah. Which was great because everyone just came out to see us and they came out to watch us because they were listening to our music. They wanted to watch us play the music that they heard when they bought our CDs, LPs, whatever. And that was great. They were talking to us only about our music for the most part, you know, which is the way it should be. But I guess, you know, it's something we can't really escape. It might take a really long time before people get used to the fact that metal can come from anywhere and it can be as good as anywhere else. But I would say it's, if there were more Indian bands who were putting out quality material, like, you know, every year, every second year, touring a lot more, then I think the whole tag of being an Indian band would slowly fade away. But right now, I don't think there are enough of us doing that, which is why it's still a novelty. Because once upon a time, Brazilian metal was a novelty, you know, until Sepultura completely blew that notion out of the water. And then, you know, tons of bands came out from Brazil after that. But no one says Brazilian metal anymore. It's just metal. It's like, you don't call Angra Brazilian metal. It's like progressive metal or whatever. Because the, you know, that road has already been worn. It was already worn by them. So I don't know, maybe in the next 10 years, this tag might drop. But until then, I guess we're stuck with it.
I must ask you now, you're like 6 albums in. Do you still notice any difference between how Indian fans or your friends react or respond and maybe even receive your songs versus a global audience?
See, I'm going to set the record straight. In India, we don't actually have that many fans, in my opinion. Or, you know, we have fans, but I don't think they really get what we are all about. You know, some of the older guys, some of the guys who are about 30, 35, some of the older generation, yeah, they get what we're trying to do and they kind of get the music we make. In fact, most of our sales that happen in India happen to people of that age group. You know, it's mostly not the younger crowd. The younger crowd are all on Facebook liking our stuff and commenting, yeah, good stuff, man. It's just fine. I mean, it's all cool. Some of them come out to gigs. Yeah, it's cool. If you come out to a gigs, it's mostly an older audience as well. You know, it's not really a very young audience. Overall, I would say the Indian audience, they don't exactly get what we do. I mean, it seems like they enjoy what we do, but I don't think they really get where we're coming from. But, you know, abroad, because this kind of music has been there, been a part of their culture and their life, their growing up years or whatever you want to call it, since the 60s and the 70s, they get the vibe. If you read all the reviews that have been coming out for Force of Danger and even for Afterburner before this, they all talk about that feeling of nostalgia they get when they listen to our music. And you can only get that feeling if you've lived through all that, you know. I wouldn't really expect a 17-year-old kid to get a feeling of nostalgia from listening to Force of Danger. He won't really know what that feeling is unless he, you know, kind of really, really got into it, which would take a lot of time and stuff. But most of the audiences abroad who listen to our stuff, they've been through all that. They get it. They get where we are coming from because we've been through all that as well. So it connects better with them than it does over here. I guess it's just a generational thing, you know. That's the only way to put it.
Okay. So, you know, some cities in India, like Delhi, Hyderabad, and I think now a bit in Bombay, gigs have started. Actually, earlier, before we got on this chat, I saw that the rock band from Bangalore, Parvaz, has actually announced an All India tour next month, which I feel is quite ambitious. But for me, what's really exciting was that one of my favorite venues in India, which is Fandom at Gillies, which is, of course, in Bangalore, is going to have gigs soon. So do you guys have any plans to perform there soon? And what about the rest of India? Hint, hint, Bombay.
I hope so. If things go well, I mean, if things open up as they seem to be opening up slowly, we might think of doing something at Fandom in December. Maybe. I don't know. Because we haven't actually practiced for like 2 years now, so we might sound like shit also. But yeah, if not this year, then next year for sure. If everything's opened up and everything's fine, we will plan on, you know, doing like a multi-city Indian tour, if you can call it that. Because it won't really be a tour; it'll just be like weekend holidays. It's been a long time since we played in lots of parts of India, like Bombay, for example. So it's about time we set that record straight. And of course, we have to get ready for our, you know, European gigs and stuff. So this is the best way to do it. Play locally, get out globally and kick ass.
I really do hope that we get to see you guys live here and that you guys have a really kick-ass 2022. So time to plug where people can reach you or the band, or more importantly, how they can get hold of the album and merchandise. Where can people do that?
Yeah, you know, anyone can reach us on Facebook. Facebook seems to be the place where everyone gets in touch with us. You can get in touch with me on Facebook. I'm always there trolling people's posts, commenting shitty stuff everywhere, you know, spouting my stupid opinion on all sorts of things. So yeah, that's the best place to get in touch. For merch, if you're in India, we will have merch available in December, most likely, because we have to get stuff down from Europe, CDs, LPs, all that stuff. If you want shirts, you know, we got shirts, some hoodies are coming out, caps, all that fun stuff. It's on rockandrollorigin.com. If you're abroad anywhere, you can get our stuff from Bandcamp. Most of the good merch is on Bandcamp. If you live abroad, you're lucky. You can get all sorts of cool shit. But in India, you'll have to wait a while because I think we have LPs, CDs. We are also going to work on a tape deal. We might get some tapes down as well. And we might have some limited edition box sets and all that stuff. I don't know, but this is what management is talking about.
Management.
Which is basically one guy sitting in Austria in his jogs.
Hi, Madhav.
Yeah. Management, if you're listening, sign me up for one of those Cryptos logo t-shirts that are only available on Bandcamp to fucking non-Indians.
Yeah, make sure he sends some down.
Alrighty, man. Nolan, thanks so much for joining us. And yeah, full power, man.
This is fun. Thanks a lot for having me.
Thanks.
As always, we are at hornsuppod.com and on Twitter at hornsuppod. Send us something to read. I'm on Twitter at Asmawani.
I'm at Trendcrusher.
Keep them horns up.
Horns up, everyone.